This is the ACIA New Horizons podcast.
Today I'm joined by Danielle Williams, who has been an intelligence analyst for 16 years and worked in five different police forces, from small and rural to some major cities. Danny's also been a special constable for 11 years with West Yorkshire Police, and having spent 8 years on the front line, she has now moved into a training role and teach new recruits to be constables. Danny, it's great to have you on. Obviously, we're both part of the ACIA, so it's great that someone else is on the podcast today.
Thank you, Paige. It's good to be here. A bit nervous, my first podcast.
No, it's good. It's great. And I know loads of people want to hear what you have to say. So let's begin then with just learning a little bit more about you. So obviously people see you, you know, within conferences, but let's talk about you, your career, and what you've learned whilst working within different police forces.
Oh, wow. When you said it was, you said I've been an analyst for 16 years, I thought that makes me sound really, really old. And I certainly don't feel it. But it does kind of feel like I've been around forever now. But I started as a researcher back when sort of NIM was quite new and lots of forces were recruiting into this new world of analysis. And it was quite an exciting time to join policing, I think, because things were changing. We were moving much more to a sort of intelligence-led approach. And I think the minute I came into the analysis profession and I heard about what analysts do, I immediately wanted to be on murder investigations. Yeah. And that was like my focus for the first few years. And then amazingly, having worked on division for quite a long time, a job came up on a major incident team. And I was really lucky and I got that job, and I worked on murders for 4 years, which was really, really exciting. Really, really good to see the fruits of your work. Yeah. You know, you when you get to court and you get to sentencing day and hopefully you've got a guilty verdict, and that gave me loads of job satisfaction. And then I ended up moving, that there was a reshuffle in the force where I was working due to austerity. And I ended up moving in back to a divisional role. And when I arrived at that division, it was kind of the analyst without portfolio. And at the time, the child sexual exploitation was hitting the news a lot. And so I sort of picked up that and ran with it. And that became even more exciting and even more challenging. And then I got to a point where I kind of felt, well, where do I go from here? Because I love being an analyst, but I kind of felt at that point there wasn't much of a career development path for analysts. I think, like a lot of analysts, I think I felt that if you moved up to a senior analyst role, you kind of moved a bit away from the actual analysis, and I'm sure a lot of analysts would agree that that's the bit they really love. And so I took a bit of a leap of faith and moved into a one-year contract with a local council, and had a great time on a multi-agency child sexual exploitation team. And then because I'd been going to quite a few conferences, people were letting me know about jobs that were coming up, and when you're in a one-year contract, you're constantly looking at jobs to make sure that you don't miss anything and that you're not going to end up unemployed. So then I ended up working in the for a national agency in slavery and trafficking, which was again a massive challenge and gave me a completely different perspective on analysis, because it was very much in a strategic world, which I hadn't really sat in before. So that was really interesting. And then I currently work for National Police Chiefs Council on a International Crime Project.
So would you say that, you know, your role as an analyst, you know, involves different, you know, techniques and strategies? And obviously that comes with problems, because you touched on, you know, there's no real clear career path for analysts. And I think we both have sort of strong views on this, especially as we've both done a conference previously talking about this. You know, what are the challenges and how can analysts overcome these?
Yeah, so I think that is one of the challenges. It's how do you make a career within analysis? I think back when I was working on the CSE side of things, I'd been with that force for 8 years, and I was looking around and thinking, do you know what, I could sit here for the next 33 years. I'd just got my pension statement, it said I had to work for another 33 years. And I thought, yeah, I could sit here for the next 33 years. I could have a really interesting job, because every day is different. You come in and you don't know what you're coming into, because something might have happened overnight. And I could have really enjoyed that. But I kind of felt I was doing myself a bit of a disservice because I wasn't progressing.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of took a bit of a risk, and which is unusual for me because I'm usually quite risk averse. But yeah, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to jump and see what happens. And I'm so glad I did, because having sat there in my little analysis bubble of what was going on in that force, I was missing what was happening in other forces. And so it was really nice to get out there and see what else there is.
Yeah.
And moving into the National Police Chiefs Council, there are so many other units within that also have analysts. And I would never have known they were there before. The National Crime Agency has loads of analysts, and they're always expanding their analytical teams. And it's a very different environment. So I think the key thing is to keep an eye on what other agencies are doing, what other jobs are out there, and take secondments, take attachments and loans, go and find where your passion is and where you want to be, because whatever you want to do, there is a role out there for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think with challenges, or, you know, that analysts face, you know, networking really does help, you know, learning, as you said, learning of others, because there's no real guidance for analysts within police forces. And I think, you know, having, as you're saying, you know, going away and, you know, delving into other, you know, ways to learn is really important. So obviously last November we both took part in the National Analyst Conference, and we spoke about continuous professional development, and we know why we thought it was necessary to discuss this, but let's tell the audience why maybe you felt that this was important to get out to the rest of the analysts.
I think that conference came at sort of a bit of a time for me where it clashed with some of the training work that I'm doing, because within my training role in the specials, I'm doing my level 3 City and Guilds qualification in learning and development. And so within that, I was looking at some of the theory of stuff, and with having gone through sort of the austerity times when nobody had any money and you were really lucky to get on a training course, we're now, with developments within the digital age, we are now in a time where continuous professional development is at its most accessible and free most of the time. You know, I've done some of those massive online open courses, and they're great for giving you a bit of a grounding in something you might not be fully conversant with. So for example, it's going back a while, but back in 2013, I didn't really know much about modern slavery and human trafficking. So I did one of these online courses, and came out with a really good understanding of the legislation around it and what were some of the signs of modern slavery. And from that, sat at my desk and thought, hang on, I think I've got a bit of a modern slavery problem here. And, you know, that was entirely free. I did it in my own time, but it wasn't taking up lots of time. And some of the ones that are online, you can sort of listen to them on your way to work, whether you're on the train or, you know, plug the audio into your car or whatever. So I think there's so much out there now that I thought it was a good opportunity back in November to really highlight that continuous professional development is now in your hands. It's not, you're not waiting at the behest of others to grant you permission or to pay for you to go on a course. So I think that's why it was important to talk about it at that conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And going on your point, you know, we mentioned that YouTube is definitely somewhere where, you know, there's loads of tools that analysts can go and look at. But also George Washington University has a whole playlist of classes from their intelligence analysis module. And we discussed that as well. I mean, that's all, you know, relevant to analysts and also other police personnel that work within the forces. So, and like you said, they're free, like this podcast. All you have to do is plug it in and listen to it. And hopefully it gives individuals, you know, a good use of information to adopt within their practices. So you've worked within police force for a very long time. You don't look old, Danny, I promise, but you do have a very long career within the police force.
This lockdown is showing all my grey hairs nicely.
No. So what changes would you like to see within the intelligence community? So obviously networking is a massive one. So maybe you could start with that and, you know, the importance of this.
Yeah, I think that's massively important. You know, back in that, this is going to sound like a bit of a plug, which it kind of is, but, you know, you're listening to our podcast, so you kind of expect us to plug ourselves. But back in sort of 2014, I didn't really know anybody outside of the force I was working for. And the nominations came round for the ACIA awards ceremonies, and I forwarded the nomination forms to my boss with a winky face on the email, and he actually took me up on it and nominated me for one of the awards. And part of the prize, which I don't think was a prize by the way, was to present at the ACIA conference. That was absolutely terrifying. I'd never done anything like that before, and I had to present in front of 300 people. But pushing out of my comfort zone really helped me. And from there, I discovered I actually love public speaking. And from that, learned that if you offer to speak at a conference, you generally get to go for free. And that's how I've gone to conferences for the last sort of 6 or 7 years. I'll speak. Anybody want to speak? Yeah, me. Because that's how you get to that's how you get to go to conferences and get to meet other people. And I did a bit of a tour with the Modern Slavery Police Transformation Unit, training, doing analyst training days. And that was really interesting, going around all the different regions, meeting analysts from all over the country, and finding many of them had the same issues, but also finding out the differences between them and how different forces use their analysts, which was really, really interesting. So on the back of that conference with ACIA, it's given me the confidence to put myself forward, to speak at events. And just through doing that, people talk to you. And I've got such a good address book of people who, if I don't know something, I can go and ask them. Or, for example, in my current role, we're thinking about doing a little project and thinking, well, we don't hold any data, but I wonder if my friend in this force might like to collaborate on this. And that's sort of been really valuable to me, I think, being able to see things from other people's points of view, to find out what they're doing. And staying current in the analytical world is, you really have to work at it. We've seen this year with, in the last year, I still haven't got used to being 2021. In the last year with all the COVID stuff, we've seen how quickly criminality adapts to its environment, and we need to do the same. We need to keep on top of how the criminal environment is changing so that we can ensure that any of our recommendations are really worthwhile and useful.
Absolutely. And I know you're very familiar with, you know, existing literature around this, you know, particular topic. You obviously read about it. I know some analysts don't, you know, engage with the literature. Would you suggest that that's important for people to look at what, you know, researchers are suggesting are the issues?
Personally, yes. I know some people might not agree with me on this one, because, you know, taking the time to read academic articles and engage with academia does take effort. For me, not so much, because you and Scott Key are within ACIA and we talk once a week, and we share stuff between us all the time, which is brilliant. But I'm also a person who likes to understand theory as well. I did my degree was in British politics and legislative studies, but wherever I could have an option, I took something that was ideology related, because I wanted to get back to what are the underpinning values within these systems. And so I am somebody who likes that theoretical side of things, but also some of the stuff at the moment around evidence-based policing, and I know you've spoken to Professor Larry Sherman recently. All of the stuff that they're doing is absolutely applicable to any analyst working in law enforcement.
Yeah. When I was speaking with Professor Sherman, the podcast is out now, so everyone can go listen to it if they haven't already done so, but when he was talking about this apprenticeship, I was just, you know, wow, what they're trying to do. Obviously, he is the founder of evidence-based policing. Like, who wouldn't want to learn of someone like that? But, you know, it's important to stress, obviously, I'm now dropping names, but ACIA is a place where our members can come together and pick our brains. You know, you've got academics, you've got people within the field, you know, everyone's specialising in different areas. And I think it's really important to network, and I, you know, you've stressed that throughout this podcast. You know, it is important for you. Literature also, you know, adds to that, adds to the richness of your understanding around the topic.
Absolutely, and I think while I have just said that in some ways learning and development can take some effort, I think there are certainly things that I look back on and think they weren't an effort. So the quality of entertainment these days is phenomenal. When you watch something like Deadwater Fell, which was on, it's on All Four, and it was David Tennant, and it's really hard to talk about this without absolutely ruining the story, but it's basically about domestic abuse. And within that, the way they portray how, because it's all done through flashbacks, and the way they portray the realization in those who had witnessed things between the couple, and how they reevaluate them looking back, and the effect that it has on them knowing that they missed signs, I think that's that's really powerful. So you can learn even if you're watching something that's supposed to be entertainment. Other really good things at the minute are things like Unbelievable on Netflix. That's I always recommend my students watch that. There was an ITV drama with Keely Hawes called Honor.
Yes, yeah.
That was also very, very good. So I think we can learn even when we're not meaning to. And as one of my mentors used to say, never stop learning it, please.
Well, you do. You know, you're always learning. But I think with learning, it takes particular kinds of people. You get those that just go to the job, you know, work, go home, switch off. And there's others that continue to work and want to, like yourself, want to learn about other things to help them with their roles. So we need to be, you know, mindful of, you know, how to deal with uncertainty and to ensure that our, you know, judgments and our understandings are not clouded through, you know, the same thing all the time. So, yeah, I think we love talking about Honour. We spoke about that before. It's a great documentary. Yeah. And it does. We learn through TV and other, you know, social ways.
Yeah. And I think just to pick up on what you said there around some people who try not to think about work outside of work. I think I've been in that position where certainly when the kids were younger, where you go to work, you come home, you've then got to pick the kids up from school, make tea, get them to bed, get them bath bed and all that kind of thing. And by the time it's like 9 o'clock, it's the first time you sit down and within half an hour you've fallen asleep. And yeah, there's very little time in some cases for personal development. And that has, in some ways, it's a bit of a luxury. But as certainly as I've got older, my kids have got much more independent, then I have that time.
Yeah. No, it's good. And yeah, it's, and also the pressures. I mean, I haven't worked within a police force, but I can only imagine the pressures that, you know, and this face and other police, you know, officers or whoever else, you know, and how we manage them and how we also sort of manage our time in terms of engaging. So, yeah, I mean, it's really important. And you should definitely stress that throughout this podcast. So, Danny, I have a question for you, which I know you're going to fulfill. And I know the listeners are probably itching to hear top tips for analysts just to help them with their everyday career development. What top tips do you have that you follow and you think work in terms of continuous professional development?
I think move out of your comfort zone. I think we can get quite comfortable in certain roles and just think, yeah, I can just stay here. But if you do want to develop, move around, take a secondment, take an attachment, reach out to places like ACIA to find other people who are doing something a bit different from you, and start to network. That's got to be my top tip, I think, because that's what's helped me. And, you know, I don't regret any of the moves that I made. As much as they were sort of taking temporary contracts, I'm now actually working as a contractor rather than being directly employed by a police force. So in terms of risk, it is quite risky. They could turn around tomorrow and say, we don't need you anymore, and that would be it. But it's allowed me to develop as an analyst, to grow in confidence and to really understand what's out there and what's possible. So I think that's definitely the first one. The second one is, I think, be in charge of your own career. Don't wait for somebody to offer you a training course. Go find some. I think most forces pay into the apprenticeship levy. So if you want to go on Dr. Sherman's apprenticeship, go and apply for it. You know, it's a lot of work, but it is a recognised qualification, and a lot of continuous professional development these days is free. You know, and it doesn't have to be formal. We have moved away from the idea that learning takes place in a classroom. Learning takes place everywhere, even if you're sat at home watching Netflix. You know, you can still learn stuff. So yeah, it would be move out your comfort zone. CPD doesn't have to cost anything. Network and build contacts and be open to change. I think those are my biggest top tips for developing yourself and your career.
Yeah, I think they're great. And you've heard Danny's top tips here first. I don't think anyone's ever asked you that. Oh, well, I don't know, Danny. Has anyone ever asked you your top tips?
No, no, they haven't actually.
Well, they're needed.
I did once get, I had a job interview once that was for a government department, and they were implementing these new strength-based questions where they're like quick-fire questions that you have 2 minutes to answer. And so although I didn't get asked top tips, I did get asked, what are your values? Which was an interesting question to be asked with only 2 minutes to answer. But seeing as I teach the code of ethics, I was able to sort of fall back on that one. Somehow also bring in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the West Wing. Don't ask me how, but I did. So yeah, I think I'm really enjoying these podcasts that you've been doing, Paige. I think they're really professional, and I'm hoping lots of other people are liking hearing them as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope so too. I think ATIA, we have so much to give, you know, with our the individuals that are included within our network and our members. I think this is just a great platform. And I know individuals that I spoke to before, after that conference we did for the National Analyst Conference, people love what you're talking about. So I think you've done justice in terms of continuous professional development. And yeah, you'll be able to find Danny's email online on the ACIA website. And if you have any questions, I'm sure Danny will be more than happy to answer them. Danny does love a chat, don't you, Danny? You do like a good chat.
I do love a chat. Yeah, I'll talk to anybody, me.
So there we go. Danny has offered to help anyone that requires her assistance. Danny, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It has. Thank you, Paige. And good luck with the rest of your podcasts. We'll be right back.